So you remember last week you talked about how you just been kind of just scrummaging through the garden, just pick what you can find and just throw a dish together.
Foraging
through the garden. So I did a little bit of that yesterday. I want to show you what we got. First off, I want to show you my mini cabbages I grew.
Oh, you grew some mini cabbages?
Mini
here?
Cabbages. Yeah, this cool. is completely intentional.
Yeah, that's cool.
Mini cabbages there. Aren't those cute?
Those are cute.
That's yeah. what happens when you do a no-till experiment. You end up with some mini cabbages.
Like well, they talk about no-till. We can get on that subject in a minute.
Yeah. You got something to say about that?
No, I just said you raised a few eyebrows. Got little people stirred up on your no-till video,
oh, did you?
Did
you watch that?
Well, I may have.
My Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
Anyway, so if you grow cabbages like this, what happened is you didn't give them enough nitrogen. And mine burned out and run out of nitrogen. And that's what happened there. And not a variety-specific thing, because it appears to be happening with all of them. But that's what happens. If you grow little cabbages, you know you didn't feed them well enough. You got to feed them next time. And my no-till plot isn't... supposedly at some point in time, the biology is supposed to just kick in and you don't have to give them any fertilizer.
Well, what I don't understand what the difference in fertilizing is with no-till versus non-no-till.
Well, with all the no-till people say that the biology gets so developed in there that you don't have to have any fertilizer.
But that doesn't classify. That's not an excuse why these cabbages are small. You could have still fertilized them even though there was no-till.
My goal was not to fertilize them, to see how much they're getting just from the cover crop and the compost and the lack of tilling. So I intentionally didn't fertilize them. Now, I could have fertilized them and pushed them, but I intentionally didn't. To show what happens in the first year of a no-till experimental plot.
Okay, so let me ask you this question. When was the last time you went out into the woods where there's no fertility and nothing has been, no fertilizer been at anything, and you seen a big old healthy cabbage growing out there?
I ain't never seen it. Or squash or mater.
Why? Why is that?
Well, because woods are shaded. Vegetables like
not only the woods are shaded, but this is not a native plant. You cannot natively grow this by just throwing a plant out there and a seed out there and expect it to make a big old cabbage plant without adding anything to it.
Well, I agree. It needs certain nutrients to get big. Now, if you're happy with this, then go for it. But if you want to grow big cabbages, you got to feed them.
Yeah.
That's what I say. Anyway, so we got those little babies there, and I got a bunch of cilantro. Smell that right there. This stuff, I can eat it raw. It's so good.
So I read an interesting article the other day about cilantro, and you probably didn't know this, but there's two types of people in this world.
Really?
The ones that like cilantro and the ones do not.
Really?
So supposedly what it is, I don't know if it's a gene or some people, it tastes like soap to them, and it's just a terrible, terrible taste to them.
Hmm. That might be kind of like that burpless cucumber thing. See, I never really understood this, why people need burpless cucumbers, but evidently there's something within the cucumbers called cucurbitacin, and it makes some people burp.
Yeah.
And I ain't never had that problem, but we have several burpless varieties we carry. Evidently, some people have issues with that.
Yeah, there's probably 50% of people out there cannot stand the taste of cilantro, and 50% of us just love it.
Well, bless their heart.
Yeah.
Also got some little carrots. They ain't very big yet, but they're big enough to forage, scavenge a few of them. Anyway, so I was out there, and I was thinking what all I had in the garden that was harvestable. I said, you know what? I'm going to make me some cilantro lime slaw.
Ooh, I bet it's good.
Now, I didn't have any lime juice, so I used some fresh lemons from my mom-in-law's tree. And there's your fork right there. And I didn't shred the carrots. I might want to shred. I got some perfecting to do to my recipe. I didn't really use a recipe, but some perfecting to do. But this is my first go at it. And you don't want to eat this if you don't like cilantro. It was heavy on the cilantro.
So here we are in the new year. I'm going to go ahead and talk a little bit while we're getting all fixed up.
You want to tell folks how I made it?
Yeah, go ahead, and then I'll fill us in.
So everybody's going to be wanting a recipe, and once I get it more kind of fine-tuned, I'll give an official recipe. But it's basically just shredded cabbage, carrots from my garden, a heap of cilantro, and then I came in there with some Duke's mayonnaise, salt and pepper. You would normally use lime juice. I use lemon juice and a little cumin. Gives it some good flavor there. Now, I think you could use Greek yogurt instead of Duke's mayo if you want to be a little more healthy. But I think it tastes pretty good with the mayo there. And this would be mighty fine on a taco. I got some leftover steak that I grilled last night. I think I'm going to make some.
Just forage in the garden, find what you got plenty of or what you got available. Cut it up, mix it together, add whatever you want to make it spiced to your liking. And there you got a nice, healthy meal.
Mm-hmm. And this kind of slaw, it was pretty good when I first made it. It's better if it sits in the refrigerator.
Now, is this made from mini cabbage or from, this is mini cabbage?
All I got is mini cabbage.
Okay.
That's all I got. Now, these mini cabbages, I don't believe I'm going to be able to have enough to make this more sauerkraut like I was planning on. But as we're going to talk about seed starting here in a little bit, I'm going to plant me another round of cabbages now, early spring, right around time. And I'm going to get back to growing my big cabbages and make me some sauerkraut.
So this is the first week of the new year, which is 2021.
Mm-hmm.
Last week, we worked half a day on Thursday, maybe a little bit longer, some of us, and everything was caught up. We was doing good. Everything was nice and calm, and we was all getting prepared for the new year. And I don't know what happened. I don't know if it was the stimulus checks that dropped over the weekend. I don't know if it was the political unrest that we have in this country right now.
Big election this week.
I don't know if it was the reason for our COVID cases have spiked and we're at an all-time high. I don't know what caused it, but I can tell you one thing. People decided over the weekend that they wanted to garden, and they wanted to garden big time. Our website blew up with orders like we've never seen before and come rolling in there. And we was absolutely caught off guard. We didn't have staff, scheduled to come into work. So we had called some of them to come in over the weekend and try to get started on getting some of these orders out. And we worked the weekend some. I started Saturday night working. We worked all day Sunday, and we've worked hard ever since. We've just about got all the orders caught up. But it's just amazing to me how it just happened, boom, all of a sudden. So what we did is we started looking around and said, this is weird. And we started looking at some of our competitors. One of our competitors just shut their website down altogether for a few days. Other ones started putting up shipping notices on their website 4 to 5 days before they could get orders out. So what we've seen throughout the industry is a huge influx of orders in the last few days. And we've also seen more and more shortages. We've stalked some suppliers, and we're seeing things are maybe a little worse than what we had anticipated.
And I started buying up seeds much as I can get. So looks like it's going to be another crazy year. And we appreciate your patience. And we're going to try to maintain our standard of getting orders out the same day. But there could be a situation where we get behind a day or two.
Seed potatoes are fixing to get short also. Had a conversation this morning with our supplier out of Minnesota. It says they're starting to get short. Now we're in the 1st of January. So if he tells me that, then I know it's reason for concern.
So
a little bit.
So if you have a definitive date, we're going to stop taking?
No, but it could be
sooner than we thought. So get your pre-orders in.
There's one particular variety that he said was, and I'm not going to call it, that he said he didn't have any more on. We still have a little bit of that variety left, but not a whole lot. But he said there was no more. That one is one of the most popular ones. So we're going to have to play it by ear on a lot of that.
Speaking of getting busy and things getting crazy, we have a lot of you are on there. Some of you may not be on there. We have a group on Facebook called the Row by Row group. You can find it real easy searching on Facebook. If you have, especially during this busy season, if you have any technical questions or any questions about when to plant something, even a question about a tool, why can't you get to work right, drip irrigation, anything. If you have any questions, highly, highly recommend going on that Facebook group and putting your questions there. It will get answered a lot quicker because our emails will back up this time of year, and we're not always able to get to them in a timely manner. So if you go on that group, there's plenty of people in there that use our products all the time that can help you out a lot faster than we can help you here with an email backlog. So if you got a technical question, when to plant, when any variety, anything, I promise you there's somebody on there that can answer it for you. And even if you tag me in a question on there, sometimes I may not get to it. But
yeah,
somebody will get to it. We got awesome members on there, some really good gardeners. So go use that as a resource, that Facebook group. That's what it's there for community and to be used as a resource for people that have questions.
Now, if you have a warranty issue, just the opposite. Do not post it on there. Send it to customer service and we'll be glad to take care of it for you.
Yeah, send us a message on Facebook or send an email to customserve@hosttools.com. If you have a warranty or a damage, maybe something got damaged in shipping, don't put that on the Facebook group.
It doesn't do any good.
Because we may not see it. So in that case, yeah, but if it's just a technical or a growing question, use that group on Facebook there. TikTok. We have a TikTok.
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 You we say have, TikTok?
I don't know. The demographic of our viewers and customers may not, they may not be on TikTok. I don't know. Maybe a few of them are. But TikTok is kind of the latest and greatest thing in the social media world. You want some more?
I'm not right now, but that's pretty doggone good.
Anyway, TikTok's kind of the latest, greatest craze, and we do have a TikTok account, and there's some videos and clips that are posted on there that are not necessarily on our other accounts.
Some people may not know this, but I have an ability that I've shared on TikTok.
Yeah.
Some of my dancing moves.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of TikTok is known for lip singing and dancing, and therefore I wanted to share my ability and my God-given talent with you all out there. So there may be something on there with me showing my dancing, but I don't know. Go check
your
it out.
Your vast God-given mm-hmm. talent. So if you're on TikTok, go check us out and give us a follow. And if you're not on TikTok, maybe just go give it a try. There's some funny stuff on there. It's not just TikTok.
And there's actually some gardening stuff on there. We follow some gardeners on there.
Yeah, that's right. So a lot of people have been asking on the Row by Row group about lighting for their, average person doesn't have a greenhouse. It's great if you have one, but a lot of people are asking, what kind of lighting do I need for my seed trays? What kind of lighting do I need to grow my seed starts? And we got something coming pretty soon, and we'll give you kind of a sneak peek on that.
Yeah, what happened is we started to notice a lot of people having trouble with leggy plants, and we knew that there was a need there for education and products to help that from to keep that from happening. So for about 6 months now, we've been working on putting together a product line that would help you grow good quality transplants. But not only that, you can also grow food indoor during the wintertime.
That's right. That's right.
And what we have here is Baboom. Okay, so I'm going to show you one of the products that we got coming.
We're actually going to have, I think it's going to be 3 or 4 separate products.
This is just one. So this
get
is
back to the middle here. I think you got enough cord.
I think I do too. This is an LED, and there's the key word there, LED grow light system. Boom. And the neat thing about it is the lights are adjustable, so you just unscrew these, you can move it up and down to where you need them to be according to the plant height. Now, what we got growing in there right now is some indoor lettuce, and I'm going to let you guess what this is.
Microgreens, that is...
taste it.
That's cilantro, I can tell.
Yeah, it is. You're sharp, aren't you? So we got cilantro growing. You all that live in climates where you can't grow anything this time of year, this is an ideal product so you can grow some indoor lettuces. These lettuces have been grown in here. You can see there. Or we got cilantro there. And a lot of people love cilantro, including me. And there's multitude of other things you can grow as microgreens, herbs. But you can also use this to start your seed trays and to grow your plants in early spring. These particular trays right here have inserts in them, and we also have a 24 cell that has the inserts in them so you can grow your tomato plants, your pepper plants, and everything and get them ready to come out. I'm gonna go into a lot more detail when we get these in, but they have a wicking mat underneath there, they have a drainage there so they don't sit in water. It's absolutely a wonderful product. These are made in England. We get a company over there to make them for us. It's a great product. We expect to have them on site, I'm hoping by the end of the month.
And you can tell here, and if you're doing this indoors, the key thing with indoor grow lights or anything is you can't put them way above the plants. That's why if you grow without a grow light and you got ceiling lights there, they get leggy almost immediately. You can tell this lettuce here isn't leggy at all. You want to keep your lights right above those plants there, not touching them, but right above them. And these kits are going to come with their own trays and inserts.
That's right.
They'll also, if you've got some of our 12 or 24 cell trays, they'll work with those
sure.
as well, so you can interchange them out. And like he said, you can grow transplants in here. You can grow just straight food to eat.
Mm-hmm.
Plant you a tray of lettuce or microgreens in here. Very, very versatile. Really high quality stuff here. We'll have, this will be our kind of biggest complete kit here.
Yes.
We'll have one that's about half this size.
Right.
And then we've also got some really good hanging lights coming for those of you that grow in our big trays.
Or yeah, 162s or 338s are ideal for that. Now, we made a conscious decision early on not to be bogged down with price and not to make the cheapest product out there. And one reason we did a lot of research and we went with LED lighting. It was superior to the regular old lighting that we, I think they call it T5 lighting, which is just a normal old fluorescent light. Puts off more light, it's a lot safer, doesn't put off near as much heat. The lifespan is tremendous. It's a lot over what your regular fluorescent lights are. So this is a great quality product. It's not going to be the cheapest one out there on the market, but it's one that we're proud to sell and support.
Yeah, and this is going to last you a long, long time.
And we're going to do some fun stuff with this when we get them in the springtime. Because I got a setup in there, and I've been working on this. I've been growing stuff in here for a while. Man, I'm going to tell you, you can grow a lot of groceries in there. You know, the way you keep things stepping up and keep you something planted all the time, it's fun.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, yeah, that is coming soon.
Watch this. Boom.
Turn her off. All right. Time for some new varieties here. And I don't want to get too deep into this because we'll do a whole show on sweet corn. I'll kind of explain the differences between varieties. But we've got a new type of sweet corn we just added. So as far as sweet corn goes, you've got your standard varieties, which are like your Silver Queen. Okay. You've got your sugary enhanced varieties, which are like your Peaches and Cream, your Ambrosia. And then you've got your super sweets, which are like the Obsession, the Passion, the Devotion we've got. Then you've got your, what they call synergistic types. And synergistic types are the triple sweets and quad sweets. Those contain kernels from standard, sugary enhanced, and super sweet.
So you get the best of all worlds.
Those have all three. And then there's a new type that just kind of came out in the last few years. And keep in mind, these are all non-GMO. You're formed from just cross-pollination. These are called super sweet augmented. And what that means is these have mainly, it's super sweet kernels, but you have SE kernels in there too. So it'd be like mixing Ambrosia with a super sweet variety.
All on the same ear.
Yeah.
Cool.
And the value of that is the SE varieties like Ambrosia and Peaches and Cream, they tend to have a little more crunch, a little better texture on them than some of the super sweets do that. So these have super sweet and SE kernels on them, and we've got three varieties of these. One of them is not on the site yet, but we've got two of them on the site. One of them is called Yellowstone here, and so this is a yellow one. I haven't grown a yellow corn in a while. It might be the time to do this. I might need to grow this one right here. So we've got Yellowstone, we've got a white one called Eden, and then we've got a bicolor one called Nirvana that's coming. The only thing with these guys here, same as with super sweets, need to wait till your soil warms up to about 65, 70 degrees before you plant these guys. They like a warmer soil for germinating as opposed to something like a Silver Queen. But if you go on our website, on our sweet corn page, there's a little filter button and you can see all the standard, all the SE, all the super sweet, all the synergistic, and all the super sweet augmented.
Man, it gets complicated.
Five different categories
there.
And we'll get into that more of when we do our corn show. So we got some new sweet corns there. Also got a new popcorn. This one here is a favorite that folks like to grow with kids and stuff, the old strawberry popcorn.
I grew me an acre of that when I was about 20 years old. I was going to get filthy rich.
Oh, yeah?
I didn't get filthy rich.
Didn't happen?
I made a decent crop, but I couldn't get rid of it. Huh. I couldn't sell it. I ended up putting it in the cabinets everywhere, going to hold on to it. The weevils got into it.
Yeah.
My popcorn.
A lot of people like to grow this for decoration, but you can also pop it.
Yeah, that's what we popped some of it. Now, I don't even know if you was born. I guess you was, but you was a little bitty thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We had it all in the house, all in the kitchen. We had it stuck everywhere. I had strawberry popcorn.
Anyway,
makes a short, little bitty stalk.
Yeah. And it just looks like a big, the ears ain't super big.
No.
Just 3 or 4 inches.
I planted on some new land next to a pond. I didn't even have irrigation, but I made a decent crop.
Yeah. fun little crop to grow. Like I said, a lot of people use it for decoration, but and you can use it for decoration and turn around and pop it.
Yep.
What else we got? So beets.
That looks like an onion.
It's a white beet. So beets is one of those things you kind of either like them or you don't. A lot of people that don't like beets don't like that kind of earthy flavor that they have. But if you want the sugary sweetness of beets without the earthy flavor, this is the way to go here. This avalanche beet. Pretty sure this is a, I can't remember if it's an AAS winner or not. We've added a couple AAS winners lately. But anyway, this is supposed to be a really, really good 97% germ on this. So white beet, get all the sweetness, not as much as the earthy flavor. That earthy flavor comes from them red pigments.
You know, that's more of an acquired taste, I think.
Yeah, yeah. You just kind of enjoy it. And then this one right here I'm really excited about. We have a couple varieties of what they call golden wax beans on the site. And this one right here is supposed to be the top-notch one, the biggest, best producer as far as golden wax.
Or as I like to say, it's the cat's meow. The
cat's meow. This one's called Goldmine. And this is the creme de la creme as far as yellow wax beans go. So go check that out. And we've got all the new varieties in one section on the site that says new for 2021. Okay, so we alluded to this a little bit last week, but it's already time to start thinking about starting seeds.
Yeah.
And we've got a lot of people asking when they need to start this, when they need to start that. And so I figured today I would just kind of give you a general idea of what my plans or my schedule is going to be for the next few weeks up to a month as far as getting stuff started. Now, this is going to vary a little bit, and I'll talk about what factors may go into play there. But I just want to give you kind of my schedule, and then you can take where you are, what you grow, and kind of modify it based on that. So we are in zone 8B down here in South Georgia. And so the tentative dates that I'm going to give, and I'll give you kind of an idea how to back this up or speed it forward. So if you are a letter above, so if you're in zone 8A, then you're probably going to want to do things 2 weeks later than I do it. If you're in zone 7, you probably want to do it about a month later than I do it. Now, that's just a general rule. It could be 1 week instead of 2 weeks or 3 weeks instead of a month. But that kind of gives you a general rule of when to kind of back up based on what zone you're in. So we're in 8B. If you're 8A, if you're letter behind, back up a week or two. If you're a whole number behind, back up 3 to 4 weeks. Other things to consider here as far as your timeline is how big of a transplant do you want to put in the ground? Because it takes longer. You know, some people still grow just a few tomato plants in Dixie cups in the windowsill.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to plant a Dixie cup size tomato plant, that's going to take a little while to be ready to go in the ground than a little plug is.
It is, but now once you get that tomato plant about yay big, from there to there, it's not very long if you shoot the juice to it.
Right. So let's pull out our options. I didn't bring a 338 because we really want to grow tomatoes in those. So we got our 162s here, big heavy-duty trays, and these are our smaller kit options.
By the way, these are going to fit in this grow light situation.
Yeah, those are going to fit in what we showed you earlier. So we've got the 12 cell and you got the 24 cell there. It's going to take a plant a little longer in here than it is here just because there's more soil in here. So you kind of got to factor that into your timeline. The other thing, like you mentioned, is you need to factor in how hard you can push them. Now, in your greenhouse, we've got things set up with that brass siphon mixer. We can push them pretty hard. Maybe you're not necessarily set up to do that or not comfortable doing that. Then it may take you a few more weeks to get them from seed to ready to go in the ground. And you can, if you know what you're doing, you can push these things as hard as you want to. If you realize, okay, we're going to, spring's going to come early. Let's push these puppies. Or if you say, whoa, looks like it's going to, cold's going to stick around a little longer, we'll back off a little bit.
A lot of times you can judge that by when Easter is. We have an early Easter or we have a late Easter. Easter, when it comes around, is an indication sometimes if we're having an early frost or a late frost.
I don't know about that. It sounds like them moon playing.
Yes, sir. You can play by that Easter now. Okay. Watch your Easter. If you have an early Easter, you better watch. If you have a late Easter, it's going to be better.
Anyway, so those are some factors to consider, how big of transplant you want to plant. for the most part, we'll plant tomatoes right out of these cells here. Now, I am going to do something a little different this year with the, I'm going to try a few of these new heirloom varieties we added, and I think I'm going to step those up to a bigger pot, and I'll tell you why, because I know as soon as the heat comes, whatever, it's going to zap them. So I'm going to try to get a bigger plant in the ground, maybe get a little bit of head start so I can get a few more tomatoes off of them. But as far as the disease-resistant hybrid ones, Bella Rosa, Snapper, Summer Pick, like that, we'll go straight from these.
You cannot grow a better tomato transplant than these 162s. Is the cat's meow for those.
Now, peppers are one thing I will step up into.
And peppers are challenging sometimes, especially in the germination stage.
Yeah. Now, the commercial guys around here, they'll plant peppers straight out of these trays, same exact trays right here. However, they're playing a volume game. If you ride by their fields after they plant them, they'll lose a few plants here and there. But they're playing a volume game. The reason I don't like to plant peppers right out of here is just because they're kind of fragile. Your dog steps on one of them. Kids get out there in the garden. And if you ain't got the three or four pepper plants, you really can't afford to lose them.
What if you get out there and you're putting out your transplants there and an urge hits you like old Jason? And it does me sometimes. Well, you just take off for dancing and you done stepped on one or two of them.
Yeah, you dance all over your peppers.
Strike out.
So, you can plant them straight from here. I like to step them up a little bit. Eggplants I've planted straight from here. Pretty much the only thing we step up is peppers out of here.
Watermelon straight out of here.
Watermelons, pumpkins. Now, out of here, you could probably go with pepper straight out of here.
Oh, absolutely.
You'd probably be fine with that. We step up sometime to those little, I don't know if they're 3-inch or 4-inch pots.
4-inch.
4-inch pots, the little throwaway ones, just for our peppers. So let's talk about a schedule. Like I said, this is just my schedule. This is not a concrete rule for everybody. This is just letting you know what I got planned. Y'all kind of do your own schedule around
that. I may critique it a little bit. How about that?
Yeah, go for it. So let's start off with right now. Let's call it mid to late January. We ain't quite mid-January, but we getting there. So mid to late January, the first thing I'm going to start is I'm going to start me a second round of cool season crops. That's the first thing I'm going to get started. That's going to include cabbage. I got to grow some big cabbages. I'm ashamed of them ones I
micro cabbage
no-till plot. I'm going to do me some more cauliflower, broccoli, probably one more little plant in the lettuce. And I got to get me some rutabagas. I didn't have as good luck with direct seeding rutabagas because it got real cold. I'm going to go back to transplant my rutabagas. So cabbage, broccoli, cauliflower, lettuce, rutabagas. You can do kohlrabi, lots of other cool crops. Those are the main ones we transplant. So that's going to be first on the list. And that's going to be done.
What about calendula?
Calendula?
Calendula. I almost got it right.
I won't talk about flowers at the end, but yeah, you could go ahead and get that going right now. Wouldn't be a bad idea. Another one would be like snapdragon, some of the flowers that like the cooler spring weather that don't really care for the intense heat.
Yep.
So after I get that second round of cool season crops going, that's when I'm really going to start on my nightshades, which is going to happen, like I said, mid to late January, within the next week or so. I'm talking tomatoes, I'm talking peppers, I'm talking eggplant, and I'm going to grow some tomatillos this year.
So let me ask you a question. If you're going to plant these in the middle of January, when do you want to plant them into your garden?
I'm aiming, seems like my historical data in my head is going to be early to mid-March is when we're usually clear of frost. So that's when I'm going for. So that's going to give me about 6 or 7 weeks. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do those heirloom tomatoes first, and then towards the end of January, I'm going to do my hybrids. Because the hybrids are getting planted straight from here, I'm going to step up the heirlooms, so I'm going to need a little bit more time on those.
So the earliest you want to transplant your tomatoes and your peppers and things like that would be around the 15th of March.
Yeah, when we're sure we're not getting any more frost.
We're not going to get any more frost. So if you plant your transplants at the 15th of January, that gives you 8 weeks for the middle of March.
For those heirlooms, considering I'm stepping them up.
Okay.
Now, that's
about as quick as you can do. We need to tell people that is working off a tight schedule right there.
Yeah.
That's everything's perfect. You know how to fertilize them. You can push them along. You have an early spring. Weather's good. And that's fine. The earliest you need to plant tomatoes, peppers, and eggplants, and tomatillo is going to be the middle of January. I always like to wait a little later than that. But that's the earliest you want to plant them. And if you want just to, you know, be a little lazy and wait another week or two, that's fine. Mm-hmm. Gives you a little more insurance.
Yeah. Now, in here, these are only going to take, we've had them come off as quick as 5.5, 6 weeks.
6 weeks is about as fast as you can grow a plant off in there.
In here. So
then you better know what you're doing.
So with those hybrids, we can do those at the end of January. They give us 6 weeks to the middle of March. Yep. That would be about just right.
My very first crop, that's what I do, is I grow them up. Now, I plant several crops coming along after that because a lot of people don't get around to planting their tomatoes till April.
And you were trusted in being the Norman Park tomato.
Yeah, I grew a lot for a lot of friends, and I have different plants coming along there. And the earliest you want to plant these is middle to late January.
Where we are.
And don't feel bad if you don't get them in the middle of the end of January. You're going to be fine.
We have not planted until early February, mid-February.
I am being fine. Yeah, absolutely.
Just like I said, it's not set in stone. Just giving you a general time frame here. Okay, so we're going to do that mid to late January. Let's turn over to early February here. And what I'm going to focus on in early February is getting some herbs.
I love herb.
I'm going to grow a heap of herbs.
A heap would be a lot of them.
So basil, cilantro, parsley, borage. I'm going to try borage. We just added borage on the site not too long ago. Lots of good things about
borage. I've never
ate
borage.
Sage, tarragon.
I love sage.
I'm going to have me a nice little herb plot. and those just, a lot of those seeds are tiny. They slow to germinate. Herbs can be.
And let's be honest, you don't need a whole 40-foot row of basil. You don't need much basil. Mm-hmm.
No. Now you could grow a good amount of herbs and just one of those right there.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm going to do early February. That's kind of on my list to get those started. They'll do good from transplant. I'll grow them in. I'll just grow 7 different varieties of herbs all in one tray here. While I was thinking about that, something comes to mind. A lot of people ask this. Do you just want to grow one crop in one of these trays, or can you split it up and grow everything you're going to grow in here? How does it work when you plant a variety of crops in this tray right here? And I would say for the most part, you can mix it up a pretty good bit. That lettuce, the only thing is lettuce. You got to be careful with lettuce. It spreads out and it could shade something out. It gets going pretty fast. But as far as doing your peppers, your eggplant, your tomatoes, all in one tray, you can certainly do all that.
Yeah, you got to be careful growing faster maturing things with slower maturing things because sometimes it may shade it out. Besides that, have at it. I like growing different varieties in a tray together. It works fine.
Or you also got to figure slower germinating things versus faster. You know, you put something in here that's really fast germinating and then put peppers in here, you're going to need to fertilize one half of it before you do the other half.
Yep.
And you don't want to burn them seedlings. You have to be a little careful there.
Oh, yeah.
All right, let's move along to mid-February. So mid-February is when I'm going to be thinking about flowers. Okay, I'm going to get some flowers going. I'm going to really ramp up the flowers this year. I'm going to get back to growing some ageratum, some cosmos, some celosia, which I haven't grown in a long time, some roselle, got to grow some of that roselle, nasturtium, zinnias, and then marigolds and calendulas. Now, you could have started the calendulas earlier. I just kind of grouped my flowers.
And you may be better off that celosia and roselle to wait a week or two after that from mid-February. I'm just giving you a word of caution there. Both of those light the heat.
Yeah.
They do not like cool soils.
We're going to have them on a heat mat.
You're going to have them on a heat mat, but you don't want to get them out there before their optimal growing temperature and conditions.
That's
in there.
Right. They won't like it.
If you're going to be lazy and laze around on something other, roselle and celosia, two of those love the heat. It's okay.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to do a tray or two of flowers mid-February, and then late February. Hopefully, I'm aiming by late February to have everything started, at least for our first round of planting. Now, these are things that grow off pretty fast. I need to add one right there. These are things that grow off pretty fast in the trays. These are also things you don't want to put in the ground too early because you will have some transplant loss mortality there, so to say. So late February, going for sunflowers. You don't have to transplant sunflowers, but that first round I like to transplant. Okra. You don't have to transplant okra, but a lot of you have trouble. A lot of y'all jump the gun on your okra and try to direct seed okra.
Happens every year.
y'all try to say that the okra's got bad germination rate or something, it's because you direct seeded okra in some cold soil.
It will not come up.
It don't matter if you got whatever trick you got, soak it in buttermilk water or all that. You got to wait till your soil's warm for that okra. Now, you want to get a head start, you need to transplant them. But you don't want to put them transplants in the ground when it's still a little cold outside, because I've had that happen. And you'll lose about a quarter of them.
And you better have some heat mat underneath this right here when you're germinating that okra seed.
But that's the way to get the jump on everybody on the okra game, have okra before everybody else, is to transplant it. Late February is when I like to get those going. Pumpkins and winter squash, those things grow off pretty. That's probably one of the faster growing transplants, especially in these cells right here. Once those things come up, they get off pretty quick.
It's a prime example of what we were just talking about a while ago. Now, I would not want to plant half of it in winter squash.
And half in peppers.
And half in peppers.
Right.
I mean, that wouldn't work very well.
Because there you would be fertilizing them winter squash or pumpkins, and your peppers ain't even hardly come up yet.
Right.
So pumpkins, winter squash, those are two you don't have to transplant. But in the spring, we found we have better luck with that. The last one would be watermelons.
Watermelons.
You don't want to get those started too early.
No, but you know what? You can plant your watermelons around here about, if you want to get your early crop in, you can plant your watermelons. You can transplant them around here around the 15th of March. Anywhere from the 15th of March to the end of March, 1st of April is probably the ideal time to get them out.
But those grow off pretty fast in the tree.
They do. They actually grow off a little. You can grow those off in 4 weeks.
Yeah. So, you know, if you start those too early, what you're going to end up having is either some root-bound plants.
Leggy plants.
Or some that you're going to have to step up. So you got to be careful. Don't start the fast-growing stuff, watermelons.
When I say leggy, I mean they done grown up and fell over. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. I'm going to do some You pick a seedless variety, and I'm going to pick a seedless variety. We'll try these seedless watermelons.
Oh, I know which one I'm going to do.
Which one?
It'll be a yellow one.
Okay.
Yeah.
I gotcha. All right. So that's our schedule there, and if you have any more questions about that, you can put them in the comments or go to our Row by Row group on Facebook and ask them there. Folks will be glad. Time to get to some questions.
Yep. First one is from Thomas Sims, and he's saying, always enjoy the show. Looking forward to it every week. What would you say are the top 3 to 5 short-day onion varieties that have the longest shelf life?
Okay, so this isn't, I haven't scientifically tested this, but from my experiences over the years, the ones that store the best are the more round sweet onions and then your white onions. Your flat granite type, although they're delicious and good to eat, they don't seem to store as well, and your red onions don't seem to store as well. Your rounder sweet onions, I get longer storage out of those. I don't know why that is. That's just kind of what it is. So, considering that, I've got 3 for you right here. 2 of these I have growing in my garden. 1, I didn't, we got the seeds in after I planted, but I wish I would have been able to try it. So, we got the Duster, which is a round sweet onion. We got the Cougar round sweet onion. Both of those I've got are looking good in my garden. And then this one here is a white onion called Cirrus. It's a short day one as well. Any of those 3 are going to give you the best storage as far as a short day onion goes. Okay. Number 2 is from Tia Potts, and she says, what's the difference between sweet corn, popcorn, and dent corn, aka field corn? Do you have to grow a popcorn variety to get popcorn, or can you just pop any corn?
Sweet corn was designed to be eaten fresh. You cannot pop sweet corn. If you let it dry up, that kernel just swivels up to nearly nothing because it's got a lot of moisture content in it, more so than field corn or popcorn does. To have a popcorn, you got to have a kernel that's got a good seal on there, because steam inside that kernel, buildup of steam inside that kernel is what makes it pop. So sweet corn will not pop. Popcorn was developed strictly as a popping corn. Now on the field corn, I'm gonna go ahead and break it down. You got, let's see here what they said.
Field corn, popcorn, field corn won't pop neither.
Flint will. flint will.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, these two different kinds. So let's break the field corn down into two different kinds: flint and dent. Dent corn is that corn once it's dried, it's got a dent in the end of the kernel right there. It's used for cornmeal. It's used for all kind of stuff as a dried corn. They grind it up, make flour out of it, corn flour, several different things like that. Now the flint is a small, it's on a longer ear, but it's a small kernel and it's rounded. And it is a lot harder than the dent corn is. You can pop the flint, however, I wouldn't recommend it. It's not bred for that. So if you want a popping corn, buy you one of these fine popping corns we got here. Use your field corns. Now, we do eat some field corns. I've talked about Hickory King.
Roasting ears.
We do eat them as roasting ears, but that may be a southern thing. I don't know. Primarily, we use our field corns to grind for cornmeal and grits. And we use our sweet corn to eat fresh off the cob. Pick the one what you want the end results to be, grown spread specifically for that, and go for it. All right.
Good job.
Next one's from Joshua Herron. He said, I got my hands on some Mountain Vineyard tomatoes. I've seen it says you would grow it on a trellis, but would a normal cage work well too?
So a lot of people, and I know Jason at Coghill likes to grow this way, a lot of people like to grow tomatoes on a cattle panel or some kind of trellis like that. And I tried that last year with a Hortonova, basically the same concept. I don't really like that way of doing it because it's a lot more, you got to go out there fairly regularly and feed them through the trellis or either tie them up at a certain point. It's a lot more effort, in my opinion, doing that way. So I'm not down with that way of doing tomatoes. I like either the Florida weed or like the cage. Now, I didn't do it in cages last year, but I'm going to get back to my cages this year. And I'm going to plant me a couple of Mountain Vineyards, and that's exactly where I'm putting mine in. I'm putting
them
tall cages we sell. I'm still going to do the Florida weave. I think I'm going to have two rows of hybrid determinants for the rest of my tomatoes. I'm going to put them rascals in cages. It's just easy. I've tried it a bunch of different ways. And now for those of you who are growing that can grow tomatoes all summer long that may be in a milder climate where those indeterminates are going to keep growing and growing and growing, you're going to need something taller than a standard cage, just something that you made or whatever. But down here, they're going to bite the dust in July anyway, so that cage is tall enough for as long as they're going to last.
Yeah, I've been doing that for years. I grew my standard tomatoes, my sandwich tomatoes. I grew them, used Florida weave. In my Romas, I always grew two or three heirlooms, my yellow pears. This year it's going to be Mountain Vineyard, whatever. I may not have but two or three plants of those. It's just simple to use the cage.
Makes it quick and easy.
Yep.
All right, number four is from Edwin Martin. He says, does that hibiscus make a pretty flower before you harvest the edible parts? He didn't see a picture of the flowers on the website.
Yeah, now he's talking about the Roselle hibiscus that we grew this year, and it does make a real pretty big flower. For you that know what a cotton bloom looks like, it's real similar to that, but it's got a pinkish flower inside, but it makes a big old pretty flower, similar to okra, similar to cotton. But it's got that pinkish color inside, very pretty.
But don't you harvest it before it opens up into a flower?
No, the flower makes, then it makes the capsicum after that.
Oh, okay. So
the flower comes first, then the capsicum is after the petals fall off. Calyx.
Capsicum is the hot stuff with peppers.
Yeah, I'm getting that. Jeez, anyway, after the petals fall off, then that forms, and that's when the real red, rich stuff, that's what you peel off and eat.
Okay. I got you.
Yep. All right. So Linda McNone says, Travis, what kind of butter beans are you growing this year? I'm looking for some that produce a lot of beans.
So I mentioned I was going to grow me a big arbor of pole butter beans. And I just got word this last week. There's a variety we're adding called King of Garden Pole Lima.
Never heard of it.
Now, if I wasn't going to be able to get those in, I was just going to do the Christmas limas. I was going to do a pole butter bean is what I wanted to do with this.
Christmas lima is one we've been growing in our family for years.
That's a good one. That's a really good one. But I'm gonna go with this King of Garden. I kind of want a green one to put up. So this King of Garden pole lima is what I'm gonna go with.
It's still a lima. It's a big bean.
Yeah, and we're getting these in. Should be in the next month or so. We should have them by the time anybody needs to plant them. But that is the one I'm probably going to grow. Number six from Lawrence Bill says, when are you going to show your new building?
Hey, Lawrence, building's coming along. We need to do a video on it soon. We've got the top on it. We're working on some of the inside and the front. We've got some little small things we're having to work on. But it's coming along. We can't get in there soon enough, so we need to do a video on it soon.
Yeah. Oh, we got electrician back there.
Electrician's been back. We got lights hung. We can't wait. We ain't got walking room where we're at. We're tripping over one another, and we are ready to get in that new warehouse.
Yeah, everybody's in here been fighting, arguing.
Throwing tantrums.
Time to spread everybody out.
Let's give just a quick little update on some seeds coming in. So Jimmy Red is expecting to be sometime in January. We expect some more of it in because we ain't got a lot left of it. And we're expecting some more varieties to come in January. I would suspect, with the exceptions of peanuts, it's probably going to be February before we get our peanuts in. By the end of January, we should have most of our seed varieties in.
Oh, yeah. Except the field peas is always going to be, you're going to be around March. Because you don't, even down here, I don't know that you want to plant those for April 1st. You know, they like a little warmer soil, too, to germinate.
Field peas and peanuts is going to be the last two things we get.
Yeah. We'll have them, and we'll have plenty of them. Just be patient with us.
Yep.
And
some of these corns is going to be another couple of 3 weeks. We got the blue corn that's going to be coming in. I forgot what else. I know the Jimmy Red because we're waiting big time on Jimmy Red. Got a lot of people wanting it.
Mm-hmm. And we can get field corn. We're getting it just as quick as you can get it. So if you buy field corn online or somewhere, it's probably last year's seed. Not field corn, field peas.
Yeah.
If you buy field peas somewhere, if you find some, they're liable to be.
If you find some.
So we'll have a fresh crop in. I think I got a whole pallet of zippers coming in. I know we'll sell out of them, but I got as much as I can get my hands on.
Yep, good deal.
All right, so hope everybody enjoyed the show tonight. As always, if you have any questions, comments, definitely put those below.
Boom.
If you did enjoy the show, boom. Give us a big thumbs up. Hit that subscribe button, ring that bell. We'll see y'all next week.
Take care.